Well, thank you very much. I tell you what, you've gone beyond the call of duty to make me feel welcome. I never thought in Rapid City you would have brought Minnesota weather for me, but I do appreciate it. I have to tell you, it's humbling being in front of this group. I see a lot of guys with a little gray hair, and maybe it looks like an awful lot of wisdom. And I tell you what, it was nerve-wracking getting me to prepare for this event. This is the Cadillac of cow-calf meetings in the United States. So you can understand when my wife, while I was fretting the other night in bed, kind of worrying about what I'd say to these guys that would give them any value whatsoever, and I was fretting, and my wife turned to me in bed and said, "What is keeping you up?" And I said, "Jennifer, you just don't get it." I said, "In your wildest dreams, have you ever thought that I would be speaking to a group like this?" She looked to me and she said, "Husband, you're never in my wildest dreams." So let's set the stage with that. So you know I don't impress my wife all that easily. There were some questions being talked about just previously to what we were talking about. And they were asking, like, why do you do this? Why do we do this family ranching? Why are we involved in family operations like this? I can tell you, I can answer that question very, very easily. There is no better way to raise your kids than on a family ranch. Plain and simple. There is no better way. I put this up here to throw you off a little bit, but that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's all working together for a common good, knowing that this family is all gathering together to make something happen. By the way, I know you can't quite see it very well, but that's a pretty good sheep. A family operation, this was our family, kind of alluded to it just a little, but it's dad and mom, 9 sons, no daughters that we're aware of, okay? 9 sons, 8 daughter-in-laws, 32 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, okay? To give you a visual, imagining going to work, and that is who you go to work with. I look back, I used to be the executive director of the American Galvy Association. I remember a guy named Dave Nichols came up to me or called me shortly after I was leaving. He said, "Aren't you going to be glad when you can leave all these politics behind?" Take a look, guys. Do you think I'm left a lot of politics behind? Imagine that. Take a look at those people and the diversity of what it takes to make everybody get along. You got dad, mom in the center, by the way. Both turned 81 years old this month. Just celebrated 60 years of marriage last summer. But look at the diverse group. Look at all those individuals that you not only have to feed, but make each other like one another, pretend to like each other as they work together. By the way, we're Catholic, in case you're wondering. And in fact, I'm the bad Catholic in the bunch because 2 of my brothers each have 7 children, and I've only got 3, as you saw in the picture. So I'm the worst Catholic of the bunch. Family versus business. I think you have to start off at that point. Family versus business. Are you in a family operation? Are you a business operation? What is it? Well, at Thanksgiving, what is it? Okay. We all agree at Thanksgiving it's a family. So far we've knocked that one out. Everybody in agreement? But what is it from day to day? What is it? Is it a business? Somebody said business. It's a business. Well, then I can fire my brothers. Because when I was at Galvy, if they didn't do what I told them to do, you know what I did? I fired them. Can we do that? How long do you think it's going to take before I fire my way out of this problem? Think about it. It's a family business. It's a different, entirely animal. It is neither business nor is it family. It is a family business which has a life of its own. It is a different creature. You cannot fire people, so therefore you have to figure out how to involve them so that they are in a happy mode most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. Okay, here's the rest of the story. I showed you a picture of them. Now I'm going to show you where all these 9 brothers of mine, or 8 brothers of mine, and my 2 nephews that are back, have all gone to school. How many people see that? One of them went to South Dakota State. So the one thing we know is he's not in charge. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to set you up that way, whoever was hooping and hollering. But imagine now, not only do you have a large group, but each of them is accomplished in their own way, right? And now you have to make them feel engaged as if they are the person. They are Schieffelbein Farms. They are what makes the difference. And as you look at that diverse group, the key element to understanding that is we are all different. Even though Dad's got 9 sons, all listed 1 through 9, we're all different. We all do different things. But here's the critical point. Everybody does something that's very important to the long-term success of the farm. Every one of them. Okay? I'm sitting here. Let me see if I can figure out this pointer. Is it the red button in the middle? Yep. I'm 7th son, by the way. And by the way, you usually pick who's in charge by if they went to Texas A&M. I'm the 7th son right there. But look at all these brothers in here. How about Tom? Tom went to the North Dakota State School of Science in Welland. Do you think Tom would like to get in front of this group and talk to you all? Tom would just rather lose his left arm than have to talk to you. Okay? That's a true story. Now, let me tell you Tom's value. Okay? 1 week ago, we had 48 hours before it was going to freeze solid in Minnesota. Okay? So we are trying to get everything plowed down as quickly as we can, right? Because it's going to freeze solid in 48 hours. So as fate would have it, what happened to the plow 48 hours before everything had to be done? It broke, right? We broke the axle on the disc, okay? That's where I took over. I said, I can handle this, Tom. Called John Deere and said, John Deere, we need an axle. And by the way, it's 48 hours till freeze up. When could they get us the axle? In 49 hours. Tom comes to the rescue. I go to Tom, and you know these fixer types, right? Do they ever make you feel good about breaking it? Come on, how many are in the family farm? And all? They kind of gives me the old, I said, Tom, can you fix it? He didn't answer if he could fix it. What did he start doing? What'd you hit? Were you driving too fast? Did you hit that rock you should have picked up earlier? Boy, it's going to be a lot of work to fix this thing. And then that's when you know, you just say, you know, I'm an awful person, Tom. God forgive me for being a horrible tractor driver, but I'm going to leave it here. And if you could look to it to see if you could, might make it work again. 3 hours later, what did Tom have? He had that whole thing disassembled, put back together, welded, and we're plowing again. How valuable is Tom in the operation? You better understand he's valuable, okay? And that's the key for every one of these. You may not be the smartest guy. He may not be the most gifted at speaking, but in their own right, they contribute successfully to the operation. Everyone is responsible in our world for a key area, okay? Here's the little dirty secret about family operations nobody wants to talk about, okay? We all think family operations will work if we just love each other enough. If we would just, my mother prays, my mother's a good Catholic wife, our mother, okay? She prays and she prays. She goes to church every day. And she prays that we love each other more. Now that helps, but is that the secret? There's two things, in my opinion, when you're putting a family operation together that really matter, and they're ugly things that nobody ever wants to talk about. What will make or fail a family operation boils down to two things: money and power. Boy, that is just heartless, isn't it? It's true, though. If you look at why do most marriages that fail end in divorce? What's the reason? What's it over? Is it over not loving each other enough on Friday night? What is it over? What's the issue you almost always go back to? Say it loud. Money. And that's the grim reality that you have to understand. It's money's number one, okay? And who's in charge is number two. The way we've handled who's in charge is not by what school they went to. I was kidding, okay? Everybody is responsible for their own key area. So you look back there, everybody's got a certain area of responsibility, okay? But who's in charge? Somebody said it. The group is the boss. It really takes off the pressure then because the group is the boss. So as long as I'm doing everything right as far as leading the organization successfully, does the group interfere with what I do? No. If Tom's doing everything right to managing, to making sure our operation is successful from making all the equipment go, how many people think we jump in and tell Tom, I'd use a different wrench than that, Tom? No. The group lets it happen unless something goes off curve. So the group becomes the boss. And when you have the group the boss, this is the interesting thing, then nobody cares that somebody really is the boss. So let's say I'm really making, let's say, 60% of all decisions. If I were the boss and title, would there be people mad at me? But if I'm just doing it and they can trump every decision I do, all of a sudden, well, we're the boss. He's just telling us what to do. Everybody follow me? Because they can actually trump the result. If they don't like the way I'm telling them what to do, they can change me. Every year they renew whether or not I'm in charge or a different brother's in charge. Okay? But the boss makes the call, or the group makes the call. Just a little bit about the operation. I know you got a little bit of flavor of it, but a good seed stock guy would not get up here and tell you a little bit what we do. We own 4,500 acres of pasture and crops. We run 850 registered Angus cows. We breed on 1,000 head of those cows, cull and sell a few of them each year, of course. And we market 350 Angus and hybrid Angus bulls each year. Sell some bulls, and I actually found out that Von Thorstensen actually bid on this bull last year. But these are some bulls that we've sold that have brought pretty good money. What I'm leading up to is the rest of the story, not who's in charge, but what it takes to make everybody happy. And by the way, our sale date is February 15th, in case you want, if there's anything to write down right now, this is where everybody should be scribbling. I see, okay. We've also purchased 25,000 head of customer cattle annually, okay. We feed about 5,000 of them at our home place. The rest of them we either feed outside or resell. That's our feedlot facility and at our home place, the slatted barn. We'll talk about that just a little bit more. Here's the dirty little secret. And this is what I'm going to focus on the rest of it. Money does not create happiness, but it sure does reduce stress. I want you to think about that, because if you read the little bio that they made me write up, I came up raised on the family farm in the 1980s, okay? So I graduated 1985 from high school. Some of you are going, looks younger than I thought. Some are saying, oh, he looks older than I thought, okay? 85. What happened in 1985 in the Minnesota farm economy? Anybody remember? Does anybody remember the period 85 in that general mid-80s? Was it a good period? It could be labeled the most stressful period in the history of agriculture. Interest rates were what percent? 18, 19, 20. Did everybody remember that? Inflation was out of control. Money was the topic at our family's table almost all the time. And it had to be, because who was breathing down our necks? The banks, right? The ones who were so willing to lend it to us 5 years previously had now decided that they weren't quite so certain they wanted you to have the money. Okay? So it changed everything. And everything I'm going to talk about now is based upon that history of those 5 to 10 years where you're growing up, where every conversation revolved around money. Anybody see this movie? Just a few? You need to see the movie. If you're in a family operation, you need to see this movie, because what this movie does is it so eloquently, I think, changes your mindset on how our industry has changed. Okay? How did it change? How did the baseball industry change? Anybody from the movie? What did they talk about in the movie about how the industry changed? A walk's as good as a hit. They went from what kind of philosophy when they were picking players to what kind of philosophy? I heard it, but I don't think... Data-driven. How did they used to pick the ball players in the old days? How many people remember the scouts around that table in the movie? Eyeball. They went on hunches, eyeballs, gut feelings, didn't they? They said, you know what? I think he's the next great one. Guys, I want you to take it to the cattle industry. How many people have ever walked into a bullpen and said, I believe I've just seen the next great one? Seriously. Are you picking bulls based on, I think that bull right in front of me just looks like the next great one? This whole movie is about a paradigm shift that says if you're going to win, if you're going to be successful, you better look at the whole picture, okay? You better really look at what drives success in your business. And that's what we're going to talk about just here just a little bit. Our goal was allowing everyone to farm. And all the messages in the 80s, and I think actually it was on a topic last night, I'm not sure, was being a low-cost producer. Everything talked about being a low-cost producer in the industry in the 80s, okay? I want to show you what we did. This is our family. We succeeded. We reduced our expenses. We cut them every which way we could. We got it down to $300,000. By all marks, we were the most successful family operation in the world because we did what we were supposed to do. We cut our expenses. What's the problem when you cut expenses sometimes? Do you pay bills with cut expenses? What do you pay bills with? Who's that income? Income. Income's what should be. Unfortunately, our gross income was $350,000. Now, you saw the pile of kids, right? How do you think? Do you think we ate real well? Boy, if we didn't raise the beef, we were hungry. Okay? You must increase revenue. It's about increasing revenue. It's about increasing revenue. If there's one thing on a family operation for you to do, is you must increase revenue. What Dad told me time and time again, if you're spending all of our time as a family deciding how we're going to cut up this pie, we're missing the point. It's not about cutting up the pie, is it? What's it about? Making it bigger. Your efforts in a family operation are about making the pie bigger, not whose pie gets sliced this way and whose pie gets sliced that way. Okay? We changed our decision-making. We went entirely away from what we were doing, which is just low ball, low price. We based a philosophy on ignorance purchases on price, knowledge purchases on value. I want that to sink in. Ignorance purchases on price, knowledge purchases on value. Is there a difference? Is there a difference? I'm going to give you some examples. You got to spend money to make money, too. And that's a philosophy, especially those of us who came through the 80s. It's hard to spend money when you saw what happened, right? But it really takes spending money to make money. Every mating counts. I went through a philosophy. When I came back to the farm, this is a rule I invoked. I said, every mating that we do, if we're going to breed 1,000 females by AI, we want every mating to absolutely count. In other words, every animal has to be a high risk of producing a high revenue bull. Okay? And here's how we did it. Pretty simple stuff, not rocket science, but every heifer was AI'd twice, and every animal was AI'd at least once. We're going to give it every opportunity to have the best genetics possible mated successfully. We have rapid herd turnover. Now, if you were going to go into the commercial atmosphere, would that be a positive for a profitability or a negative? Rapid herd turnover. How about if you're a seed stock operation? It's positive because what we're selling is the genetics to make you richer. And so we have to get the best genetics in there as quickly as we can to get you the most value. embryo transfer into marginal cows. That probably did as much for our improvement of making every mating count than anything. Instead of trying to breed around a cow that may be missing something, just make her a recip. And we put the best genetics in them. 100% ETs in those. I'm going to skip through this to make sure we are on track here. Buying best value equipment. If you were being a low-cost producer, what kind of equipment would you not buy? What brand? Say it loud so the John Deere people can hear you. It would be John Deere, wouldn't it? Because why? You can tell me. I'm not going to get mad at you. It's the most expensive, right? Okay? So what do? What kind of equipment do you think we buy? Okay? We buy four of those. Okay? We buy three of those. We buy three of those. And we buy one of those. Now the scary part. How often do we buy them? Every single year. We buy new ones of those every single year. Now, what do you think the neighbors think? Those neighbors think those sheeplebinds, they're profit-minded guys. Or do they think maybe something like, boy, they got more money than sense? Which one do you think would get the most votes? Why do we do it this way? Is it because I'm a bad math guy and I like to drive green paint? Repair costs. How many people have repaired a tractor lately? Is it cheap or very, very expensive? Painful. Absolutely painful. Do you know on these John Deere's they have a 2-year warranty for everything? When do we sell them? 1 year. Because we want to sell that extra year to somebody who wants to buy a warranty, right? So what we're doing is we're doing a volume discount, buying them in. And now I have to tell you the rest of the story. When we buy them outright, but the way we buy them is per hour on a trade. Okay? This particular tractor, and you guys know tractors better than I do probably. It's probably, 120 to 30 horse? Something like that maybe? It's like a 7430, whatever a 7430 is. Okay? There's four 7430s. What do we pay per hour to use that tractor? And we own it, so we trade it out. It's a trade cost. What if I told you $3.50? Now are we looking as dumb as I thought? How about this one? $3.50 per hour. How about that one? $5.50 per hour. How about that machine? And that's about $100,000 machine maybe? $10 per hour. When you do it that way, the value equation said to buy new and use it new. Okay? That's what I'm trying to get at. It may take you to spend money, but you tell me who runs equipment cheaper than that. If you find somebody, I want to know. Help our customers earn more revenue. That's what you have to understand. When you make the pie bigger, it helps everybody, right? So our bull customers that we're selling to, do we want their calves to sell for a lot of money? Anybody been to a sale with Frank Schiefelbein at it? When Dad bids, he bids a lot, okay? Dad's planning on bidding calves is raising his hand till they say what? Sold. That's the way Dad bids calves. Because Dad believes our genetics are worth more, and I'll show you some data that shows it. Help our consumers more revenue. If they are worth more, does it mean we're going to get less? And that's what I'm going to... How about our packing partners? Sometimes we like to pick on packers, too. If I create the right genetics, can I make money and they make money? Believe it or not, the answer is yes. Going back to those calves we're feeding. There's 2,500 calves in there. That's a confinement feedlot. That barn is 1/8 of a mile long, okay? It's all on slatted floors. Underneath it is a pit that can fill up to a 12 foot of manure. Okay? That's where it is. These cattle, these calves, are the most expensive calves collected in America. They are the most expensive calves collected in America. Does that mean they're the least profitable? Does it? No. And that's what you have to understand. When you start adding genetics into things, it changes everything. For example, let's see if I go into, I'll go skip this part because we're running out of time here. Choice value, okay? CAB. If I'm feeding an animal to 1,300 pounds, okay, and one grade CAB, one animal grade CAB, certified Angus beef, and one does not, what has changed in my cost equation? Anybody? Not one thing in my cost equation. Not one thing has changed. I have exactly the same cost for the two animals. On the revenue side, what has changed? I get $50 more per head for the certified Angus beef calf. Okay? It's $6 a hundred weight, so it depends what they weigh, but it's roughly $50 a head extra. What's that call doing? That's growing the pie. It's not me taking money from my commercial customers. It's me giving my commercial customers high value, but me utilizing the genetics in there to add value. Now, does the packer, does he get money for the certified Angus beef? Does he just get 50 bucks? No, he makes money too. So he makes on. So that's where this whole game comes from, this money cow system, okay, of making the genetics work at the start. How about vaccinations? Let's go into those 2,500 calves, basically. By the way, right in here, we doubled the size of the barn right in here, okay? So that's why it jumped from 1,500 calves to 2,500 calves. I'm going to talk to you about being a low-cost producer, knowledge. First year, 2009, we used all Pfizer, which is now Zoetis, right? Shots. We weaned 1,500 calves. How many did we lose? Not one calf. So being the geniuses we are, we decided to change vaccinations. Okay? Because why did we change vaccinations, by the way? It was cheaper. And everybody, what does every vaccination guy say about their drugs? They're the best. It's like a bull deal, right? You go to a bull guy. How many bull guys don't say their bulls are the best? Right? So they said they were the best and they were cheaper, right? So we used them. Look what happened to death loss. Okay? Now, what normally happens when you make a mistake and it's just a single mistake? What do you normally do? You rationalize or blame it on the wife. One of the two things. Okay? If it's a severe enough mistake, the wife gets the blame. But if it's just a small enough deal, you rationalize. You say, you know what? That was a bad year for weaning calves. Right? It was just a bad year. And we'll explain that. You'll say weaning weights. Weaning, it was a bad year for weaning weights. That's why they're bad. It was a bad year for reproduction. That's why they're down. And you rationalize why something's not right. So then you do exactly the same thing again, right? Because you rationalized what occurred. What happened the next year when we used the exact same drugs, weaned 1,500 calves? What happened? We got the same result, didn't we? Now, at this point, you got to ask yourself, are you stupid? Right? Because if you do it again, you're stupid, right? So this year we said, I helped make this call. I said, maybe we should go back to Zoetis. Anybody in favor of us going back to Zoetis? And we did. We weaned 2,500 calves because the barn had doubled in size. We had one dead out of 2,500. Now, what if we would have had 2% like the previous year? How many dead animals? How many? Yeah, 4,950 is right on. 4,950 more dead animals, right? What are they worth per head? 1,100? $50,000 more, that decision, to pay more. Paying more, did it cost you? You helped grow the pie. Did it? We're here we are in 2013, okay? Right now we've got 1,500 calves weaned. We got one dead total in the whole bunch, okay? And let me tell you the caveat on the one dead head. We bought 200 calves, all from one producer, okay? All the calves had one ear tag, but one. This particular calf had two ear tags. Which calf died? Anybody have any suspicions? Okay? That's the only one that's dead. What's amazing this year, this is just absolutely, of the 1,500 calves weaned, I texted the brother on the way because I knew it was low, but I didn't know how low. I said, how many of those 1,500 calves, though, have we treated? We had one dead, but how many have we treated? Anyone want to guess? Zero would be phenomenal. It's not zero. Six. Six. Ignorant purchases on price. Knowledge purchases on value. Getting it? You grow the pie. Take home message. Do not be a low-cost producer. Be a high net revenue producer. Okay? When you're growing the pie, you become a high net revenue producer. That must be the goal. It's not dividing the pie. And in fact, and I know we're going to be here and I'm running tight on time here, but I know we're going to have the bullpen session tonight. I will tell you, when it comes to dividing the pie, our family is nuts. What we do, and this is crazy, by the way, do you know how we divide the pie? Equally. For everything. So remember that list of people? Remember my brother Frank the Fourth, who went to SDSU? Remember that? I kind of used him as a discouraging example. He gets paid the same amount as I do. I'm 20 years older, four generations wiser, and we get paid the same. What does that do, though? If we get paid the same, what does it focus our efforts on? How do I get richer? Who said it? You grow the pie, don't you? If Frank wants to get richer, he grows the pie. If I want to get richer, I grow the pie. I never get richer because Frank got poor. Everybody follow me? 15 years later, by the way, rest of the story. How many people remember what our expenses were? What was our gross? Now the Aggie has taken over. Look what our expenses have done. Yeah, I could run for president, maybe. I feel like I could. Certainly I'm electable in Congress, right? We boosted our expenses up to $7 million, okay? Not counting feeder calf purchases. That's just feed yardage. That's not feeder calf purchases because they don't go on your statement as a cost. That's just expense. What'd revenue do? Tell me which situation you'd rather be in. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Some of you are going to get a little scared at this big number, right? Okay? I'm going to let you guess. Do we have more debt, and I'm talking actual debt, not percentage of debt. Do we have more debt today or 15 years ago? And I'm not talking percentage of debt. I'm saying actual debt, dollars of debt. We're debt-free today. Because when you do this, does that leave a little wiggle room in there? $2 million, is that a little bit of wiggle room? There's some wiggle room right there, right? And that's how you pay off debt, by having increased revenue. You don't pay off debt by cutting costs. Before you think I'm too smart, that is me. And who do you think took this photo? My wife. Somebody got it. She's got this over in our bedroom. She brings it out when I start talking to guys like you to say, you know, you should see him at home. He's not quite so smart. That is a pond. That is one of those tractors. And it is in the pond. And it took us about 6 hours to get it out of that pond. And the rest of the story is, this is the real reason we trade them off every year. Guys, I appreciate it very much. Before I let you go, I have to try one more chance of you getting that down. Thank you very much.